55. Inbound flight. CO Dawson was on site when the prison barge Purge docked outside the Hive's loading bay. But he didn't actually see the action. Not all of it, anyway. Later on, he would testify before a Galactic Board of Inquiry that the only reason he'd survived was that he hadn't stuck around to watch it all go down. That wasn't quite the truth, but it was close enough. And by that time, there wasn't anybody else left to contradict him. He was on deck with a dozen other guards and the prison's loading and landing crew as the Purge settled creakingly into its docking berth just outside the space station. Like most of the freighters and transport ships that arrived here, the barge was far too big to land inside the hangar, so that docking became a ritualized mating ceremony of pressurized coupling adapters and a long extendable gangway whose port extended down into the cargo hold itself. When the port finally opened, Dawson and the other guards straightened up, each of them gripping ghost sticks and stun pikes, awaiting the signal from Doyle, the chief gantry officer on duty, that typically indicated the offloading of new prisoners and supplies. Standard loading and unloading protocol was that the Purge's own guards would step off first, with inmates to follow. Dawson and the others stood staring expectantly at the open port. But the port remained empty. Come on. After a moment, Dawson glanced at the guard next to him in annoyance. What's this about? He muttered. I was supposed to be off shift 20 minutes ago. Now we gotta stay here waiting for... He broke off mid-sentence. Two nervous-looking guards had just stepped out of the port, each of them struggling to hold up one end of an ungainly, heavy-looking shipping crate. They were followed by four more guards, escorting a group of nine prisoners. At least they were wearing prison uniforms, although C.O. Dawson thought these creatures were even more imposing than what he was used to. Trandoshans, Gamorreans, Gran. Species that he'd tangled with before, certainly, but never altogether like this. And then he realized why they looked so dangerous. They were all smiling. Grinning, actually. Scrummy-looking buggers, aren't they? Dawson growled, tightening his grip on his static pike, already thumbing the power button and wishing they'd been armed with blasters. He didn't like the feel of things, and was already aware of an unpleasant tension gathering in his lungs, making him feel as though his uniform was buttoned too tightly across his chest and throat. Lately, there had been a paranoid air of skullduggery inside the prison itself. Rumors that the Huts or other crime syndicates had been sending their own people in as inmates or even guards to undermine operations here. Dawson didn't believe it, but the possibility still made him uneasy. He glanced back at the other guard, Greer.
Let's knock some of the snark off their faces, shall we?
The matches will do that soon enough, Greer murmured back. But I'm not sure I'm willing to wait that long.
Me either.
They stepped forward, pikes at the ready. The guards carrying the shipping crate had stopped 10 meters in front of them and put it down with a noticeable expression of relief. Eyeing the inmates, Dawson and the others came forward to receive them. Gentlemen, welcome. Siddiqui Blur spoke up from behind them, and Dawson glanced back over his shoulder to see the warden standing there along with her droid. Dawson took his hand off the butt of his static pike and forced himself to calm down. It was highly unorthodox for management to come down personally to supervise the offloading of new inmates, and he wondered if there was something special about this entire operation after all. Warden Blur eyed the inmates and the guards who escorted them. Where's your captain?
Still aboard the vessel.
Captain Styrene usually comes down to greet me himself, she said, and turned to the new inmates. How many are there?
Just these nine.
Only nine? Siddiqui glanced at the droid for verification. We were supposed to receive 32 inmates.
Just nine,
the guard answered back stiffly. and Dawson noticed the man's eyes flicking anxiously back toward the docking module, as if he couldn't wait to get back aboard, or anywhere for that matter, as long as it wasn't here. Frowning, Siddiqui approached the shipping crate. What about the freight? Is this all of it?
Everything on our manifest.
I highly doubt that.
See for yourself.
Thank you, Siddiqui said.
I will.
As she walked over to inspect the crate, Dawson saw the whole thing shift slightly to the right. Whatever was in there was large enough to make the entire crate move. He was already opening his mouth to shout out a warning when the lid burst open.
Warden!
Dawson started, but that was all he had time for. The Trandoshan who'd been hiding inside the crate had a Westar M5 blaster rifle in both hands. By the time Warden Blur dropped to the floor, her reflexes, Dawson realized, had just saved her life. The Shan was already firing point-blank into the group of guards directly in front of him. Blaster bolts streaked flickering ribbons of death into the unsuspecting front line of Coghive 7 COs, and everything around him started happening with dreamlike clarity. Dawson saw Greer, the guard 2 meters away from him, go ragdolling backward across the floor of the hangar with a sizzling hole in his chest, leaving nothing more behind him than a stinking cloud of burned flesh and fabric. Blinking, Dawson recoiled and hit the floor. He could hear the warden's administrative droid clucking out panic noises in the distance. Somewhere off to his right, Warden Blur herself had disappeared completely from sight. Hit or not, he couldn't tell, nor at this moment did he particularly care. The thought that kept circling through his mind, "This can't be happening, whatever it is. I was supposed to be off the clock 20 fracking minutes ago," did nothing to help him get a grip on himself. In front of him and all around, things were happening almost too quickly to track. The two guards who had carried the crate out of the purge were running, actually flat out sprinting, back up the gangway for cover, while the prisoners they'd brought down had already thrown off their manacles and leg restraints, which Dawson realized, with a dawning sense of horror, had never been fastened to begin with. Cold sweat broke out over his forehead, making his scalp feel too tight for his skull. The whole thing had been a setup, and they'd walked right into it. Grinning wider than ever, the prisoners charged forward. The Trandoshan inside the crate was pulling out blasters, rifles, and sidearms and tossing them out to his confederates, who seized them eagerly and joined in the one-sided firefight. Dawson turned to flee. The hangar around him was already full of smoke and the sheared metal stench of spent blaster rounds. The remaining guards and loading personnel were taking cover on both sides of him, but the hangar had been cleared to accommodate the incoming prisoners and supplies, and there was nothing to hide behind. He thought if he could get to the turbo lift, he might stand a chance of... An explosion from inside the purge's berthing port jerked his head around, and he looked back just in time to see the bodies of the two guards who'd just run in come flying back out, their corpses sprawling limply across the floor of the hangar. There was something coming out of the smoke. Something big. Staring, Dawson realized that he was looking at some kind of giant floating holovid projector hauled forward by a pair of Kel dragons, grayish-black quadrupedal lizards, straining frenziedly at their leashes. The image on the holovid was a bloated, leering figure that he recognized only from second-hand footage and word of mouth, though he knew immediately who it was. Jabba the Hutt. All at once, Dawson knew the rumors were true. But at that point, of course, it was entirely too late.
'56. 12x18.
Braced at the top of the turbo lift, Maul used his free hand to jimmy the edge of the speaker's faceplate into the locked ceiling hatch, prying it open.
The edge was too big for the gap, and his hand kept slipping. He closed his eyes, summoning the power of the dark side, searching the hatch, probing it for structural weakness. It didn't budge. Blinking back sweat, he rededicated himself to the task at hand. It was growing feverishly hot inside the lift, where Warden Blur had no doubt intended to roast him alive, or until she broke down whatever rebellious aspect she saw in him and turned him into, what, her mascot, her house pet, or something even more servile? The notion revolted him, and he jammed the metal strip in deeper between the locked hatch and its housing, wiggling it back and forth. Boiling with impatience, he released a concentrated energy field against the hatch, battering it, but it still wouldn't budge. Maul cursed, the anger rising up inside him from wherever it lived and toiled endlessly. Tightening his grip on the makeshift tool, he started working again on the hatch, forcing himself to take his time, fighting to ignore the suffocating heat, the baked air that filled his lungs, as if he were drawing breath directly from a blast furnace. He fixed his gaze straight up. The hatch itself, an unremarkable 12 by 18 centimeter rectangle, had become his entire world. 12 by 18, and in the end, it represented the difference between completing his mission and perishing in shame and obscurity.
Slifer, Radik, the Kipus.
He clenched his teeth, the heat very close to him now, pressing in from all sides, clinging to him like a second skin. By now the walls had become scalding steel plates, burning the palm of his hand and the fingers holding him in place. The inside of his mouth felt cool by comparison. A drop of sweat hit the floor and he realized that he could actually hear it sizzle. If the temperature kept going up like this, he guessed that he might have another minute or two before he blacked out from heat prostration. And then, he kept working. There was an odd, meaty smell rising up around him, and when his blistered palm shifted slightly on the wall, he realized that it was his own flesh beginning to roast.
Master, I will not fail.
He breathed in, breathed out. An odd, narcotic dizziness had started to take hold of him, and he reached down deep into whatever remained of his consciousness, forcing himself to focus. He needed to find Eagan Truax. If he could just... All at once, the hatch popped open. Cool air rushed down from above in a blessed, invigorating cloud, and Maul dropped the steel plate to the floor and scrambled up through the hatchway into the near darkness. He was standing on top of the lift, gazing up the endless expanse of the shaft. The sweat had already dried on his skin. Giving himself a moment, he narrowed his eyes, stretching out with his feelings while his eyes acclimated to the lightless space. The details began to resolve themselves around him. In front of him was a series of steel rungs embedded directly into the wall at half-meter intervals, an easy jump from here. He sprang forward, caught the first rung, and began to climb.
Boy, I'm coming for you.
'57, Killing Box.
Everything was going fine until the Kell Dragons broke loose. When the shooting had started, Siddiqui hadn't wasted any time on incredulity. In her experience, it was what she'd always thought of as the idiot beat. That shocked, stubborn moment when the human brain refused to accept the obvious, even when it was happening right in front of your face, that got you killed. Her instincts took over. Crawling across the floor on her knees and elbows, keeping her head down, she'd found immediate cover behind one of the unused load lifter droids while the initial volley of blaster fire had overtaken the cargo hold. That had been the worst of it.
Bo Shuda, Warden Blur.
Jabba's voice called out through the hollow projector's recessed speakers.
Ota mi marvalek fiz plesodoro.
Translating the words effortlessly,
Siddiqui understood the message perfectly in Basic.
Hello, Warden Blur. Let me see your beautiful face.
She'd peered out from behind the droid and seen his image hovering there. A full, stereo projection, larger than life, borne forward on a repulsor platform drawn by the two enormous Keldragons. Of course, Jabba would never risk coming down here himself. She could only assume that he was safely ensconced on his space yacht, far enough away to remain unharmed, not so distant that he'd miss out on any of the fun. As imposing as he was, the arrival of the hut, in person or virtually, hadn't really been much of a surprise. By this point, Siddiqui had already figured out most of what was happening and why, and when her ears stopped ringing from the firefight, she'd come around from behind the load lifter, stepping fully into view. Jabba, she said, hands up, stepping closer, picking her way among the bodies of fallen guards and deck crew members. The survivors, apparently, had already retreated from the hangar.
Welcome to the Hive. I take it that I've done something to provoke your ire?
The Trandoshans and Gamorreans swung around to point their blasters at her, but Jabba's hollow gestured at them to lower their weapons. The platform where the image projector sat shuddered visibly, with the dragons yanking hungrily on their leashes.
Warden Blur,
Jabba answered, continuing in Huttese.
I thought we were friends.
Fearlessness, she realized, or at least the appearance of it, would be the key to surviving the next 5 minutes. She glanced at the smoking carcasses of her own people littered across the floor, and shrugged.
Apparently not. To what do I owe the pleasure of this visit?
You executed my foot soldiers.
Then I guess we're even.
As if that weren't bad enough, you allowed them to be eaten by this inmate scum that you pit against one another for sport.
A nice touch, don't you think?
You know me well.
He chuckled and shook his head.
Under normal circumstances, I would applaud such butchery, but you don't seem to grasp the basic elements of respect.
Respect? Siddiqui cocked her eyebrow. So you're here to school me on the fine art of diplomacy?
Among other things.
Sorry, Jabba, but it won't wash, she said, taking another step forward, hands still up where he could see them. And besides, you told me explicitly that those weren't your men. I gave you every opportunity to take them back, and you denied knowing every one.
Siddiqui, Siddiqui.
The Hutt narrowed his eyes.
We're both business people. Let's stop wasting each other's time.
By all means.
She'd ventured close enough now that she could see into the crate where the Trandoshan was standing. A snarl twisted over his face, the Westar rifle still gripped in his claws. At her feet, the body of one of the guards was twitching, his static pike still clutched loosely in one hand as the last of his life drained from him.
Just tell me what you want.
Jabba peered at her from beneath wrinkled eyelids.
What I want.
This is how this works, isn't it? You send in a handful of hired muscle, and I get all intimidated and fork over whatever it takes to make them go away. So what do you want?
How about your pretty head, mounted on my palace wall, where I can admire it for all eternity?
Siddiqui smiled coldly. I'm afraid that's not on the table for negotiation.
How disappointing. Then how about a quick meal while I'm here?
She glanced at the holovid, perplexed. A meal?
Yes.
Jabba cast his eyes down at the creatures leashed to the front of his platform.
For my little pets.
At once, both dragons sprang forward and came barreling toward her, lunging over the bodies of the fallen, while Jabba's entourage stepped back to give them all the room they needed to finish her off. Siddiqui figured she was close enough by now, and she was right. In a quick jackknifing motion, she grabbed the static pike from the limp grasp of the guard on the floor, turned, and thrust it into the neck of the Trandoshan, jamming the electrically charged tip into his reptilian skin and delivering a massive heart-stopping shock. As the Shan jerked and shuddered with the current pulsing through him, she grabbed the Westar from his hands, wheeled around, and fired a series of blasts directly into the face of the first Kel Dragon. The dragon caught the high-energy particle beam straight between the eyes at less than a meter away, the impact pulverizing its bony calvarium and frying its lizard brain in its skull, but not entirely stopping it. Skidding sideways on its claws, captive of its own momentum, the thing floundered headlong into the crate where the Trandoshan had collapsed and slammed into it, still twitching. Its scaly body landed in a bulky heap at Siddiqui's feet. "Don't forget the other one." She pivoted, finger on the trigger. The second dragon circled around behind her with a guttural hiss. Tensing, she pointed the Westar at it and squeezed off around. But she was too late. In a flash, the thing was on her, knocking her flat. Squirming beneath it, Siddiqui drew up her legs, fought to pull herself away. And that was when she felt its jaws clamp down around her right calf, teeth ripping through her leather boot, deep into the flesh and muscle, grinding down toward bone. She screamed. Agony like nothing she'd ever experienced came spilling out to engulf the entire lower half of her body, swelling in a bright balloon of pain that threatened to overtake reality itself. She arched her back, her fingers groping blindly for the Westar, drumming the floor of the hangar, but the blaster rifle was gone, lost where she could never find it. Something in her lower leg came loose with a brittle snap, and her vision doubled, then tripled, as tears of pain spilled up from her eyes.
"Easy, sweet one,"
Jabba's voice growled at the dragon.
"Take your time."
Faintly, from somewhere far beyond the pain, Siddiqui heard him laughing. That hollow, orotund ho-ho-ho that nearly everyone who heard it associated with impending death.
"You see, Warden, I like to starve my precious dragons to build their appetite."
Squirming on the holovid, tail twisting with delight, the Hutt sat back and splayed his fingers over the great sack of his bloated stomach.
"But I also trained them to eat slowly, to keep you alive as long as possible. So she works her way slowly upward, a little at a time."
Writhing upward, blinking back tears, Siddiqui stared down with a mixture of horror and disbelief at the stump where her right foot had been. It was gone, torn off completely. The splintered nubs of tibia and fibula protruded visibly from the tattered pant leg. From directly above it, the Kel Dragon leered up at her, face and teeth smeared bright red, its eyes alive with unslaked appetite. As the lizard nudged its way closer, snuffling eagerly, Siddiqui could smell the thing's breath seething from its nostrils, a noxious jungle stench of stomach bile and rancid meat mixed with the fresher coppery smell of her own blood. Anger cut a white streak across the cloud of impending shock, and she knew what she had to do.
3D!
She twisted backward. Her eyes flicked across the hangar until she found what she was looking for. The administrative droid, standing along the far wall.
3D!
"Yes, Warden."
The administrative droid looked back at her from the wall of the hangar.
"Initiate reconfiguration series 121 immediately!"
"Yes, Warden."
"Jabba!"
Siddiqui shouted, forcing her voice to remain steady. From where she lay with the Kell Dragon standing over her, she was unable to make contact with the hut, but she knew he was there.
Jabba, can you hear me?
Of course I can. Do you think I would miss the sound of you begging for your life?
Siddiqui managed to shake her head.
Call it off!
She said through gritted teeth.
This is your only chance! The rest of your men now! Tell them to stand down!
Or...
your people will all die here! I swear it!
You swear it!
Jabba sat back and roared with laughter, his massive bulk shaking with the force of it.
You are in no position!
She closed her eyes as the entire hangar began to shudder around her with a deep metallic tremor. The clockwork of Cog Hive 7 going through what would be its final reconfiguration. To Siddiqui, the tremor was reassuringly familiar. The stirring of a great hydraulic giant whose sole purpose now was to save her life. Dismissing the sight of the dragon, pushing past the shock of blood loss and the trauma, she reached back with both hands as far as she could. There was a long metal tube welded to the wall at her back, and she seized hold of it as the floor panels below dropped suddenly open below her. With a shriek, the dragon plunged into the shaft. Gone. Jabba's yellow eyes widened. In front of him, the Trandoshans and Gamorreans backed away while the great walls began collapsing around them, the ceiling buckling, the entire hangar folding up from the top down while newly revealed gaps and shafts yawned open on either side of the Purge's docking port. On his hovering repulsor platform, the Hutt's expression had already changed from shock to startled outrage.
Roar! Presumptuous wench!
Spittle flew from Jabba's lips, and his entire face seemed to swell and bulge with contempt.
I will have you brought before me. I will devour your flesh. I will wallow in your blood.
His slitted yellow eyes gleamed and rolled back at the Gamorrean nearest the Purge's port.
Signal, Scupper! Turn them loose! Turn them all loose!
The Holovid disappeared. All around them, indifferent to events within it, the cargo bay continued to reconfigure. The shaft that had opened up to swallow the Kell Dragon now stood 5 meters wide, too far for any of Jabba's henchmen to jump across. But Siddiqui had a feeling that it wouldn't stop them for long.
Warden!
A voice said behind her, and she glanced up to see 3D standing over her, gripping her arm.
I've got you. Let me help.
Leaning forward, the droid's breastplate opened to extrude a slender manipulation tool with a hypodermic gripped in its articulated pincers.
Where did that come from?
You had it installed in me personally during the initial upgrade, 3 years ago.
I don't remember that at all.
It doesn't matter.
The needle slid into her arm, and an instant later, Siddiqui felt the pain beginning to ebb. It was still there, but whatever the droid had injected into her had created a feeling of welcome detachment, as if she were observing it from a great distance.
We need to get you out of here right away.
I'll be fine.
Eventually, yes. Right now, you need immediate treatment.
She stopped arguing, allowing the droid to lift her up so that she could lean on it. 3D's arms were surprisingly strong, and she was grateful for their stability. Because the narcotic was working fast, already taking away whatever remained of her equilibrium. Limping, she started back toward the turbo lift.
This way. I've already communicated with the GH-7. He's waiting for you in medbay.
Siddiqui blinked, trying to see clearly. In front of her, the lift was open and waiting. There was a rumbling behind her, a thunder that had nothing to do with the reconfiguration. She glanced back toward Jabba's side of the hangar. Behind her, on the far side of the 5-meter gap, newly released prisoners, the 30 or so inmates that she'd initially expected, were spilling out of the Purge's birthing port, shrieking and howling at their unexpected freedom. Like Jabba's entourage, they couldn't get across the opening in the hangar floor, not yet. But it didn't stop them from grabbing up blaster rifles and sidearms from the weapon crate on their side and opening fire in every direction. In the few seconds they'd been out, Siddiqui saw that 5 of the inmates had already yanked loose the long berthing platform from the Purge's port and were dragging it over to bridge the open space. It wouldn't take more than a few minutes, she realized with a kind of dazed certainty, before they'd be scattering throughout the cargo bay and then upward into all levels of the prison. And unlike the current inmates, none of them had electrostatic charges implanted in their hearts yet. You're losing control here. It's all slipping away. No, she muttered aloud. Not yet. Not like this. But a profound heaviness had already settled over her, weighing her down. She was losing consciousness as well, fading fast. Watching the prisoners pushing the gangway across the open gap, she felt her final thoughts rising back faintly like an echoing voice from the bottom of a deep and hollow well. How many more guards do I have left? 30? 40 at the most? The droid's grip tightened on her arm.
I have already activated all emergency alarms.
3D was urging, lifting her now, carrying her forward.
Armed guards and support crews are on their way down now. They will stabilize the situation. Come along.
We have to get down.
Siddiqui heard herself saying.
Down below the... to check on...
Yes, later.
She nodded foggily, the very final dregs of consciousness draining away. The last thing she saw before her eyes sank shut was the binary load lifter that she'd been hiding behind earlier, making its way across the floor toward the gap in the floor. With one great step, it breached the open shaft and made its way to the weapons crate. It reached down inside, oblivious to everything that was going on around it, and pulled out a medium-sized black box from the very bottom of the crate. Siddiqui watched all of this with glazed fascination. A final dazed question swirled through her mind. What's it doing in there? Then, blackness.